And this is the Community Connection Show with Greg Carrick here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And once again, we have the Mayor of the Shire of Yarra Ranges in, Councillor Tony Stevenson. Thank you very much for coming in today.
G'day, Greg.
I know you must be here. Life must be busy, not just as a councillor, but as the Mayor as well.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't busy.
Fair enough. And sometimes you're too busy to do your job. That's life.
It's challenging. Yeah, but it's always good to come in and have a chat to you, learn some new musical tastes. You do a great job on that front. And it's a good opportunity, I think, just to share some things that are going on in Yarra Ranges with your audience and the broader community.
Yeah, because the Shire covers such a big area that there's things going on all over the place. And if you only look to your town, you might think, oh, yeah, it's reasonably quiet. But then you just go down one of the highways and things are happening and events are on and festivals. And
We're getting into that fun time of year. The weather is warming up.
Yeah.
People are getting excited about spring. The flowers are out and a lot more starts to happen. So it is very exciting.
Yeah, there's great gardens around. You're talking about flowers and stuff because of spring, but the Tesla's Tulip Farm, they're cranking up with their tulip festival again. Mount Evelyn Street Party is on in probably 5 or 6 weeks. Things are, yeah, really starting to happen. We just had Open Studios. Their first weekend was just this weekend past, and there's another one coming up in 3 weeks.
That's right. I don't think you'd be bored in Yarra Ranges. Spring going into summer, lots to see, lots to do.
That's right. Now, we just had a very sad event that hit the Shire with Auntie Dot Peterson passing away. She was a stalwart for Aboriginal rights and reconciliation out here in the Shire for many years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, sorry to start on a sad note, but we absolutely must recognise the life and contribution and the legacy of Auntie Dot Peters. Has played an incredible role locally. Has been an incredible voice for her community and has done an amazing job in connecting people who previously perhaps were a bit left out and overlooked. I mean, brief history for those who didn't have the privilege of knowing Auntie Dot. A Healesville resident most of her life, born there in 1930. She did leave for a period of time but returned in 1969 and then spent the rest of her lives in Healesville. And working closely with the community, predominantly on sharing her knowledge, her cultural traditions, her traditional knowledge, and engaging with so many people just to ensure that those things that that could have easily been lost over the many millennia that Indigenous people have been in Australia are passed on and shared and appreciated.
Yeah,
because we're in that fortunate position, it's often overlooked, that we have amongst us the world's longest living culture. It's not something we always appreciate or understood, but I think that's changing, and it's changing for the better. So Auntie Dot played a very key role visiting schools, getting out to the community, encouraging others in a very, very warm and positive way to reconnect with this this important culture that lies at the very heart of our country. And I think one of the things that she's certainly been recognised of the many things she's had a role in is the way in which she's ensured that Indigenous servicemen have been recognised.
Mm.
We think back to, say, World War II, the time before the 1967 referendum. We had Indigenous soldiers going off to fight for this nation and to step up in times of war. But when they returned from the war, they weren't recognised as citizens.
Mm.
And therefore, they didn't receive the honours and the accolades that other returned servicemen did. And one of those people was Auntie Dot's Aboriginal father, Vincent, who fought in the Second World War. He was captured. He died as a prisoner of war on the Thai-Burma Railway, like sadly so many others did as well. The difference was that his life wasn't commemorated and recognised at the time due to prejudices at that time. So in more recent years, really from 2006 onwards, Auntie Dot had been working to change attitudes and to have that recognised that previously had been overlooked, working with the Healesville RSL, both as part of Reconciliation Week and also at the time of Anzac Day and Remembrance Day, and starting to see things change, and it led to, in 2006, the first Victorian Indigenous Men and Women Remembrance Service held the Shrine of Remembrance.
Mm.
So I think that is a very a significant step forward, and it's part of us healing as a nation. It's part of reconciliation, and I'm pleased that that work was done and her efforts recognised. So I think that's just one of the many ways in which she's helped bring cultures together and to ensure that we can move forward as a more reconciled, healed nation. So it is a sad time. It's very sad to lose her, and I do send our sincere condolences to family, friends, and the wider community that knew and cherished Auntie Dot Peters AM and all that she did for the local area.
Absolutely. Very important, her role and the role of others doing the similar work. When I look back at the cultural and community attitudes, you know, in the early part of the last century, with the First World War and Second World War, what they considered normal is now to us, well, shocking to have in the history of our nation, simply because community thoughts on that weren't brought up to scratch, you know. So with people like Auntie Dot Peters putting in the hard work to change the cultural mindset so that we can recognise that the Aboriginal communities and the servicemen are on the same level as the white Australians, and you think, well, why couldn't it have been that? Because way back then, people didn't think that was normal, whereas now we do, and we've made great advances as a nation and still have plenty more to do, but it's because of the work of people like Auntie Dot that we're making these advances.
Well said, Craig. Yeah, couldn't put it better myself. Thank you.
Climate emergency. It's all over the news, all over the media. Lots of people doing lots of things, and some crawling out of their holes and saying, "I don't believe it." But the majority of people do, apparently.
Yes, it's an interesting one, because it's funny we use the terms like belief, because I think we live in a rational age where for many centuries we've relied on science to govern how we think things. I think back to Galileo, and he was put up for heresy in the early 1600s because he did suggest that the Earth rotates around the sun and not the other way around. Well, it took a couple of hundred years for people to accept that he was right, and that the thought leaders at the time, shall we say, were wrong. So, belief really shouldn't come into it. It's a question of, do you believe in science or don't you?
Hmm.
Should we listen to what scientists have decades of training and very rigorous objective measures? Should we believe in their efforts or not? And look, I hope we've moved past the point that that most people consider that the science is settled in relation to climate change. The consensus is there among climate scientists. You're sitting about 98% consensus. Doesn't get more consensus than that. And we face a situation where most Australians are quite concerned about climate change. We only have different studies show between 5 to 7% of people are in a state of climate change denial.
Mm.
The challenge is those people often are very vocal, and they think about half the rest of the population agree with them. But the numbers are not the case. Most people are quite concerned, and in fact, a recent study, the Lowy Institute poll, so the Lowy, I guess that's money come from Frank Lowy and the Westfield empire over time. So you're talking about, if you want conspiracy theories or otherwise, this guy's an arch-capitalist. He and his sons have made billions of dollars out of shopping centres, and they've set up this Lowy Institute really to study foreign affairs and the attitudes of Australians. And so it's been a very successful experiment for them, running for 15 years. And this year, for the first time ever, more Australians have ranked the risks of climate change as the number one fear, beyond other things such as international terrorism or cyber terrorism or the risks of nuclear war.
Mm.
So it's right up there, and even more so for young people. 83% of 18 to 29 year olds say climate change is a critical threat to the world over the next 10 years, and it drops off a bit as people move on. So it's 59% of people aged over 30. But it is the majority of Australians. And I think that's reflective of what's going on. Sadly, what we've had is a very toxic political debate over the last decade or so, which has meant that many people are withdrawn. They sort of say, oh, I don't want to talk to even my friends about it, because it's just a difficult topic.
Yeah.
There's arguments about it, and therefore they disengage and they don't think about doing things about it. So I would really hope that people start re-engaging and they start thinking about it and thinking about what they can do. Now, Yarra Rangers Council, you know, our first focus is on what can we do. And we've recognised that this is a challenge. We've recognised that the global climate is in a state of emergency. And what we need to do is we need to accelerate our efforts to address climate change. And we encourage every level of government to do that as well.
Mm.
So the things we've been doing over the last decade have been fantastic. So that's been putting in policies in place and actions to reduce our greenhouse gases. And we're just about to hit our target of 30% greenhouse gas reduction from 2000 levels by the year 2020. So yeah, we've almost hit the date and we've almost hit the level, 30% below. So I think the national target under the Kyoto Protocol was about 5%. So yeah, we're doing six times better than what we set out to do as a nation. So well done to all those people who've been working hard for a very long time at council to do that. And what we've looked at now is where can we go next? How can we accelerate this? So while it's taken us from 2012 to almost 2020 to hit that target, so it's 8 years, in the next 2 years, we'll take it down a further 20% because of buying power from completely renewable sources for our street lighting. And the reason we've been able to get the 30% below has been to adopt more efficient lighting. It's been putting solar panels, so over 4,000 solar panels on buildings right across Yarra Ranges to reduce our own consumption. So we're at 25% of our power is now drawn from renewables.
Yeah.
And that's saving about $1 million a year. That $1 million we no longer send off to electricity companies. We can reinvest it into other energy saving and other emission reduction activities, all back into the community.
Mm.
So it's exactly the right sort of thing to do. But we're also right at the precipice of considering some feasibility study for solar farms on land that would otherwise be useless in the local area, on old landfill sites. And if we're able to support that feasibility study, if it stacks up, and I'm hoping it will, that could take us back to zero emissions.
Mm.
So that all of the power that Yarra Ranges Council needs for its emissions, activities, is emission free.
Yeah.
So still some work to do, but making huge strides forward on that. And part of what we're doing from here on in as well is that's a form of leadership we're offering and setting a good example, but is to go out to our residential community and our business community and find ways of supporting them to also make those changes.
Mm.
Well, the good news is, if you just look around and you look at the numbers, over 1 in 5 houses in Yarra Ranges already have solar panels on them. So they're using renewable power to run at least some of their household activities, which is fantastic, and reducing the load on our electricity grid. And we're seeing an enormous number of businesses also jumping on board, which is fantastic. Part of the reason we seem to be a bit obsessed about electricity, and the reason we do that in Victoria particularly, is that most of our electricity is still generated by burning brown coal, which is, unfortunately, brown coal is worse than black coal. Black coal's not great at all either, but brown coal has a higher moisture content, so it's actually not very efficient when it burns, and it puts off a lot more greenhouse gases. So if we can find ways of eliminating having to use electricity that's drawn from burning brown coal or any coal, then we're well on the way to a cleaner energy future and really cutting these emissions and starting to turn back the clock when it comes to our emissions.
Mm. There's lots of other things happening too in the Shire with other groups. There's a little hydro scheme running out Wisburn Way. There's the Hillsville Core project. The more community groups and businesses can get together and work out ways of cutting down the coal-powered electricity usage in their town, then the better off we are also as a society. And then we're working alongside groups like the Shire in reducing the emissions type of electricity that we use. So good work, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've named some very good community groups there that are working very hard to identify what they can do. But it actually comes down to each of us, either collectively or individually, to make some better choices.
Mm.
At this stage in Victoria, if you're using electricity and you haven't either put solar in or you're not buying green power, you're contributing to the burning of coal in this state, because coal is still the biggest source. It's changing slowly. And 42% of our greenhouse gases in this state come from burning electricity generation, most of which comes from coal. So there's things that people can do. The best thing to do, like just as with waste, if you can eliminate it, that's the best thing to do. So think about, do you need to run that beer fridge, for example, all year round, or if at all? A lot of people don't need it in winter. Turn it off. You're going to save yourself some power, and you'll reduce your emissions. Think about other things you can do. Is your lighting, the smarter lighting of the current era, LED lighting, which uses a fraction of the power of older style lighting? Are your appliances modern? So there's a range of things. Reducing emissions by composting any food waste, or reduce your food waste. There's a lot of things that people can do. So I do feel for young people that they seem to be feeling a bit powerless. They're frustrated. They've got this sense that people aren't listening to them, or people are arguing with them. But the majority of people don't argue with them. The majority of people actually agree with them. But perhaps people collectively are feeling a bit helpless. So I'd like to think we as a council will be able to help more people. We're never going to be in the position of telling people what to do. That's not how it works in this country. We're not a dictatorship. But if we can help people understand smarter ways of living their lives and ways that are kinder to the planet, then we'll certainly encourage people to think about those. And if we can draw on some of the good programs in place at a federal government level and a state government level, and that helps make a transition, we'll be certain to do those as well.
Yep. So all the great efforts at grand level will also be helped if we don't have politicians in Canberra bringing lumps of coal into Parliament.
Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
27 minutes to 2 here on the Community Connections show. You're with Greg Carrick, and I've got Councillor Tony Stevenson in the studio, the Mayor, and we've been talking solar energy and alternative energy sources and the slow but inevitable death of coal. But a lot of people are seeing the light and going solar.
Oh, absolutely. And every time someone installs solar, it does make a difference. And it's recorded nationally because there are federal incentives, and there's also state government incentives that help reduce the cost of installing solar. Of course, though, the cost of installing it now has come down enormously.
I
put some panels in 2012 at home, and if I was to do the same system again today, it'd be at least half the price. So there's a lot of good reasons to do it now, and it's been more affordable than ever, and it's great to see people locally doing it. But every time a system goes in, it gets registered with the Clean Energy Regulator at a federal government level, and they produce their data quarterly. I had a look at it recently, and I'd have to say congratulations to the people of Yarra Junction. They're leading the way. 32% of houses in Yarra Junction have solar panels on them.
A bunch of bright spots.
So they're absolutely leading the way. Probably right across the Yarra Valley, some of the highest adoption in Yarra ranges. A little bit lower in the urban areas, like your Lilydales, your Muralbarks, etc., but still really strong. And it's just down in the hills. So the Dandenongs, and that can be, there's people there living very shaded existences among those beautiful landscapes. But there's some houses up there that do get good sun. And there could be a myth that solar panels don't work when you've got, sometimes you get shade on them. The way things have changed now with microinverters and optimizers, sorry to use buzzwords, but as technology has evolved to the point where if only part of your solar panel array, that say you might have eight panels, if only one of those is shaded, the other seven still produce really well.
Yeah.
So there's every good reason for people to look at that again and just think through whether solar is right for them. And if it isn't, you might be renting your house, or maybe you're out all day and you only get to come home at night, then you can think about how you're buying your electricity.
Mm.
Are you choosing a green power alternative? Because for only a couple of dollars more a week, you can be choosing electricity, which is all generated from renewable sources,
mm.
so that you're no longer, I guess, using your wallet to subsidise the burning of coal.
Yeah, and the more people do that, the industry takes notice, and eventually the ones you feed are the ones that grow.
Yeah, and look, we will have to wean ourselves off coal. It's been fantastic for a couple of hundred years. We wouldn't have had the Industrial Revolution without it, largely. And it has been cheap, it has been abundant, but probably what we haven't always considered is the environmental impact of it.
Mm.
We've got quite a few aging coal power plants now in Victoria, and the economics are such now they won't be replaced.
Yeah,
no one's prepared to lend money to build new coal-fired power plants, and it is the numbers are that renewables are cheaper to build and run. So we will go through a transition as a state. We certainly can't just turn off power stations now. We'd immediately go off air here, which is a problem. and it'd have a huge impact on the communities that do rely on either mining coal or those power stations. So we will have to go through a transition. We just need to recognise we need to make that change and need to move on as quickly as we can and bring as many people as we can on that journey so that we can all have a cleaner future.
Yeah. And industries change all the time as new technology comes in and gets more and more efficient and has so many more benefits over old technology, then those changes will occur, whether you like it or not, because it's much bigger than you. So I remember I'm a printer by trade, and the industry out there is so different than what I did my apprenticeship in. So many changes led by technology, but on the whole, they're better changes. I can't go back to my old job because they don't exist anymore. But there's new jobs. And the same can be said with lots of different industries.
Yeah, I mean, look, things are certainly changing. It's been said the future is already here.
Mm.
It's just not evenly distributed. And so on the weekend, I had the opportunity, as I mentioned before, council has a couple of electric cars on its fleet. I was going off to ECOS at Wesburn for the Sun Festival. I thought, well, it's only appropriate that I should drive the electric car there.
Mm.
So it's the first time I've gone on it, a bit of an extended trip in it. It's a compact hatchback, five-seater. Took some family members along with me to enjoy the festival. And really, we didn't notice any difference. I arrived, I unplugged it, we started it, no noise from the engine. We glided away. And I probably just noticed a bit of tire noise more than I normally would because I wasn't hearing engine noise. But it really goes. It's got plenty of get up and go. You really are seeing no trade-off. Now, at this stage, because of where we are with technology, it's certainly as fast as any other car. It's a lot cleaner than any other car. The range is going to be limited, probably about 250 kilometres, which is fine for many people in predominantly urban use. Yeah. But you are paying more money up front, something like $15,000 to $20,000 more. And the savings compared to petrol aren't there to pay for that in that time, you know, maybe over a 10-year period. You can't quite say the savings on petrol, dollar-wise, will pay for the difference. But as we've seen with solar panels, as we've seen with transistors, as we've seen with every technology, over time prices come down, and they can come down very quickly. So I would expect that these vehicles, which are already very capable, will become the standard form of new vehicle transport within 5 to 10 years. And that has that knock-on effect that, as you were saying, Greg, before, your former work as a printer changed enormously and maybe your job's not there anymore. We'll see some other changes. Motor mechanics will have to retrain as well because these vehicles don't need... they're mechanically very simple. So the maintenance is new tyres every now and then, as you do for any vehicle. You might have to do the brakes, but probably less often than you do on a current style of vehicle. But there's no fuel filters to replace. There's no tuning that needs to be done. And they will go for years with very little maintenance required. So it does have an impact on mechanics. And we'll see how it happens. I can't see them within that 5 to 10 year period replacing trucks on the road or other forms of transport. So we'll see how it transitions. But you can see that change is imminent.
Mm.
Within 2 years, we'll have all of the major car manufacturers having electric models available in Australia.
Mm.
And we'll go from situation today where there's only three cars available for less than $60,000,
mm.
that we should see many cars available for, I'd be saying, under $45,000.
Yeah. And our choice here is limited at the moment, but I've been keeping my eye on the industry in India, and there's car manufacturers in India knocking out small, compact, cheap electric vehicles. And I just think, wow, you know, Australia could get a car industry back if we did something similar. But yeah.
Who knows? I think we're certainly doing battery manufacturing in South Australia using some of the old General Motors Holden plants.
Mm.
So for household use, one of the German battery manufacturers is now saying, well, it doesn't make sense to make batteries in Germany and ship them all the way to Australia.
Yeah.
Why not make them in Australia? So it does mean things change. And look, I'm facing this dilemma that I just think my next car is going to be electric.
Mm.
I just can't see any reason not to do that.
Yeah.
But I've been a lifelong petrolhead.
Mm.
I love cars, you know, from being, for as long as I can remember, from being, you know, 4 or 5 years old.
Mm.
And this requires an enormous amount of rethinking for me. But yep. I just can't see this going in any other direction.
Yeah.
Because there's no trade-off. Once we have more affordable batteries with longer range, it makes no sense to keep driving the current style of cars we drive with a relatively inefficient petrol engine or a diesel engine, when if we can have a renewable electricity grid and charging our cars overnight, and driving around with zero emissions, it just makes sense.
Yep. And don't worry for the sound, you'll be able to get these little USB things you plug into your sound system, and as the speed goes up, you'll hear you can choose. So I want to hear a Ferrari this morning, or I want to hear a bit of Yank Iron, you know.
I think it's just a generational thing. I think there was a time that people just would have said, "Oh, I'm missing the sound of the clip clop of horses down the main street." You know, that sound is gone. All I'm hearing are noisy cars now.
Mm.
Where have all the horses gone? So this is just
there's a song there, a country and western song. Let's not go there. And it's 30 minutes to 2, Yarra Valley FM 99.1. This is a Community Connection show, talking with the Mayor of the Shire, Councillor Tony Stevenson. And a lot of people say, Council, they should be interested in roads, rates and rubbish. And that's part of what we're going to talk about. Rates?
Well, rates, yes. Well, across Victoria, there are 79 municipalities or councils. We exist solely due to an act of the State Parliament.
Hmm.
State Government Act, and the way in which all of the councils operate, and particularly around funding rates, is set by a formula by the state government. So even if, for example, we said, and I have to be careful to choose my words here because it might be my personal views, not necessarily those of others, but if we said, oh, rates are a bit regressive, they're solely based on property values, maybe things could be a bit different that better reflected people's ability and to pay rates based on their capacity to pay, not just on what their land's worth.
Mm.
We don't get a choice in that. Yarra Ranges Council, we have to run the same formula as every single council does right across the state. So if we wanted to change it, we can't.
Mm.
We have to operate with the formula that is there. So we're probably the meat, or perhaps the tofu and the sandwich, when it comes to residents who say, well, I don't like the way rates are calculated. Our ability to change that.
Mm.
So, because the state government is setting those rules. But the good news is the state government is running a review of the local government rating system. And everyone who has a view is welcome to share those with the federal government. So they've formulated an independent panel, and they're going to review all aspects of Victoria's local government rating system. And what I'd suggest, if people have an interest, is jump on to engage.vic.gov.au, so the word engage, engage, .vic.gov.au, and have a look at the opportunity there to provide feedback on the rating system. So look, there's no question we need to raise money local government to deliver the over 120 services that local government does deliver. This local government is quite stretched. As you mentioned earlier, very large area.
Mm.
We service 55 townships, 155,000 people.
23 million trees.
millions and millions and millions of trees. But it's over an area that's about three times the size of Singapore.
Mm.
So some of that, or a lot of that's state forest, of course. But it means that all of the resources we have are very stretched geographically.
Yeah.
And we have to make sure that we can service all of the communities in Yarra Ranges. But please take that opportunity, express your views on how you might think rates could be calculated differently in future.
Yep, engage.vic.gov.au.
It's the one to search.
Get on there and have a rant.
Well, no, I think have a think about it and put forward your considered views. If you think that what's currently working doesn't work for you or friends and family, if you think there might be a different way of formulating it, understanding that we do have to deliver these local services and they do have to be financed by local residents, what would be a fairer way of doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. Because the first point you brought up about, you know, people own assets but they might be cash poor is pretty valid, because especially if you reach retirement age, you might not have much in the kitty. You got a big property that's worth a lot, but that doesn't bring money in. That's just sitting there. So what you can afford is different than what you own.
Yeah, and just to be clear there, what we do have is... Look, from time to time, people do find themselves in a state of financial difficulty. We're not an uncaring council. We will work with people with genuine financial hardship and make arrangements to support them, because that'd be just jolly unfair not to.
Mm.
And we certainly could put those things in place. But it's really just to say, give everyone that opportunity. The first step would be to understand how it works now. And if you think there's a better way of doing it, feel free to put those ideas forward to the state government, because they're very open to it. Doesn't just affect our local community, it affects everyone across the entire state.
Yep.
At the end of the day, the money raised through rates is only 3% of the entire tax take nationally.
Hmm.
So for all those services that local government delivers that are funded through those rates, it is only 3%. But people might have said, well, why don't you take 1% out of the GST that's collected nationally? Which is much, much bigger than people's rate bills, and put that towards local governments, because that might mean that that the money raised through rates could be lower. So that doesn't sound like a bad idea, because that would be fairer. We'd be taking a source of funds from elsewhere that's already, taxes are being raised, but they're being raised in a different way, and it would be based less on property and more on other sources.
Yeah.
But look, I don't know exactly what the right answer is, But and it's not for me exactly to decide, but the state government is very open to those ideas, so please bring them forward.
All right, there you go, again on the internet, interweb thingy, engage.vic.gov.au. We do have Councillor Tony Stevenson in the studio, and we just want to talk briefly about the fire danger period. It seems like we've only just come off fire restrictions, and now we're looking at them all again.
Yes, I think unfortunately this is the nature of a changing climate, that we'll probably see extended periods of fire danger as the climate changes locally. But we need to act on it, and we need to prepare ourselves. We don't know exactly the date of the fire danger period yet, but I noticed in East Gippsland they've already declared, so it's not far off. Conditions are warming up, and it's coming very quickly. So. At Yarra Ranges Council, we're helping people get ready. We're sending out courtesy letters to residents who've received fire prevention notices in the past.
Yeah.
Just reminding them to get started on their preparation. And we'll be doing inspections following that. But it's also a case of just thinking about what you can do around your place to get fire ready. It's don't leave it too late. If you're in an area where you can do burning off, check the council website to see what's permitted and when. And make sure that if you do a burn off, that you register your burn off for the emergency services. Telecommunications Authority, ESTA. So again, on the council website, you'll see the number to call, and I'm reliably informed it's a very easy process to do. The reason to do it is to ensure that our wonderful volunteers in the CFA only get called out for real fire emergencies, and not just someone doing a burn off. So please do that. Burning off isn't the only other way. There's ways of mulching materials. If you have access to a fortnightly green waste bin, use that. You can take excess green waste to the tip. And we've also got upcoming bundled branches collections. So have a look on the council website. On the front page, pop in your address and it'll tell you when that bundled branches collection is coming up for your local area.
Yeah, and that's a new website, recently revamped and much easier to use. I have been on it several times since it got relaunched, and yeah, quite impressive. So there you go. Thank you very much, Councillor Tony Stevenson, for coming in this month and talking about all those things. And you'll be in next month, and there'll be a whole lot of new stuff to talk about.
Well, thanks, Greg, and thanks for sharing some of your musical tastes with us.